you, Jianming. If you want a great office mate when you're a master's student, really trying to build some confidence with analyzing statistical data, sit next to that guy. He wrote half my thesis. He just won't admit it. I knew this presentation would be a day after the election, so I thought I'd invoke some, one of the greatest political satirists of all times. And in the title, I didn't realize it was going to come back to bite me the way it has this morning. So hopefully I can make this through this in a coherent manner. This is a unique talk for me because I'm not speaking as a wheat breeder or as a rust geneticist, essentially. Given the title of the symposium and the focus here, those are the two things I'm most comfortable being. Instead, I'm going to pretend to be a little bit more of a germplasm collection and genetic resource person. So I think the rust diseases, first I'm just going to introduce them. The rust diseases provide a unique opportunity to actually look at some of the issues related to genetic resources and characterization and utilization of genetic resources. Why have we put the amount of effort that I'm going to speak about into rust diseases? They're national and international problems. They're not potential problems. Last year alone, if you look at the USDA, National Agricultural Statistics Service, and ARS estimates, we had over $1 billion, about $1.2 billion in actual rust losses in the U.S. last year alone. And that it's been somewhere between $500 million and $1 billion the past 5 years. So this is a very real deal that we need to solve. It's an international problem. This is me with collaborators and friends from CIMMYT standing in a field in Kenya wearing Tyvek suits. And I don't like wearing Tyvek suits in wheat breeding plots, so I think we need a lot of genetic improvements so that we don't have to do this anymore. And personally, for my own wheat breeding program goals at Washington State University, where I breed spring wheat. This is an example just of a beautiful picture that looks like the Windows homepage. This field was planted to a variety that's got multiple seedling resistance genes, probably also sprayed because our farmers are a little bit protective when they shouldn't be, and it could just as easily be solid yellow in this year. This was just taken this summer. We had a very severe striped rust epidemic. The only reason that's green is genetic resistance protecting that crop. So the basic goals of the research I'm going to summarize are really to identify useful resistance loci, to try to develop or identify diagnostic markers, to enable or make genomic predictions, develop germplasm and varieties with durable resistance, and the materials we use are germplasm collections. And so our hypothesis is that these global collections, core collections, landrace collections, panels of elite germplasm in the primary and secondary gene pool have adequate resistance that hasn't been characterized, that we can tag genes or loci and develop markers in germplasm. This is a field in Pullman, Washington, or just outside of town this year in June. This is not an inoculated nursery. This is natural inoculum on a disease screening nursery where we didn't spray fungicide to control it. You can see the yellow everywhere. Very, very severe epidemic conditions. We're able to characterize germplasm quite well in Washington State and, in the other locations for things like leaf rust and stem rust because of the pressure being so severe. I'm showing these phenotypes just to basically represent that the wheat rust diseases are a fairly unique system, I think, or a nice model, because we have these qualitative gene actions where we can just have yes, no, resistance, susceptible, but there's also semi-quantitative gene action, there's fully quantitative gene action, so we have a continuum, and I think the rust diseases are a little bit unique in that because of the historical resources and research put into this, we can actually tease these things apart better than most systems could. We have diagnostic markers for many genes. We have these very characteristic infection types for particular genes in certain cases, so we can dive a little bit deeper into actually what's going on when we do something like a genome-wide association study. So I'll acknowledge the collaborators at the end. The striped rust phenotyping work I'm going to describe was done by students, postdocs in my program, as well as collaborators with Dr. Shanming Chen at Washington State. The rust, stem rust pathology work was done at the University of Minnesota Serial Disease Lab with Dr. Matt Rouse, and leaf rust with Dr. Jim Colmer there. So basically some of the world's experts doing what they love to do to get the right phenotypic data. So as part of the Tritici CAP grant, the entire National Small Grains Core Collection, or not the entire collection, the core. There's about 50,000 accessions in the Triticum collection. Is that right, Mike? And Dr. Mike Bondman there runs it. About 4,500 of those were actually genotyped with a 9K SNP chip through the Tritici CAP grant back in 2010, early 2011. And we chose to take that entire core of winter and spring wheats and phenotype them for leaf rust with seedling races in the greenhouse, as well as in under field conditions over multiple years, multiple environments. We did the same thing with stem rust, and we included some broadly virulent races, including UG99, which is TTKSK here, a particularly concerning race that has popped up in Ethiopia, Yemen, and others, that's TRTTF, a North American race, TTTTF, that is highly virulent, and then also using an older avirulent race to kind of detect some historic or fossil genes in a lot of cases, as well as phenotyping that entire core collection in the field. The stripe rust, we did a similar approach, phenotyping with 3 to 5 seedling races, as well as several field environments, both in Washington, California, winter wheat and spring wheat. In addition to that core collection effort, we've also genotyped and phenotyped specialized or panels of elite materials. So like the spring hardy elite here is North American germplasm that each breeding program contributed to make a elite association mapping panel. We phenotyped that in Minnesota for stem rust, in Washington for stripe rust. We sent it to East Africa for UG99 resistance screening. At that point, we had gotten lucky to get an extra 90,000 marker SNP chip instead of just the 9,000 SNP chip. And similar panels, both cultivated emmer wheat, Ethiopian land races and cultivars, wild tetraploid collections, Ethiopian durum land races, which Ethiopia is a secondary center or maybe the primary center of diversity for durum in nature, and elite durum wheat, and then spring wheat as well. We're pretty up to date on getting most of this data input into the community T3 tool, the Tritici toolbox, and it's available. So a few of the panels, we're still getting that uploaded over the next few months, as well as all the accession information being available from the USDA ARS, the National Small Grains Germplasm Collection in Idaho. I can't talk about all the results and things we've done in this project, so I just wanted to basically point out that we've had a flurry of papers coming out related to discoveries in these different panels. If there are rust specialists or wheat breeders that are interested in rust in the room, you can go and look up information. And most of these are maybe just online only right now, but there's quite a few papers related to the marker discovery characterization of these systems. And these are just from 2016 and 15. We have many more coming out. The other way we can measure progress through this project is, I like to think, is represented right here. This is a soft white spring wheat variety that I released a year and a half ago, that when it first entered advanced yield trials was right when we had done our first GWAS study using this elite panel. I detected a couple markers that I speculated exactly what they were detecting. I went ahead and used that information in my own breeding program. Of course, it took us 2 to 3 more years to actually verify that and publish those papers that the markers were working. But in 2011, I used those markers to select this line that had a combination of 2 broadly effective seedling resistance genes as well as 2 adult plant resistance genes, all based on this GWAS SNP TCAP genotyping projects that we had done. And for me, that progress is a very visible in years like 2016. So I normally wouldn't show one location of data and try to make anybody believe anything, but for brevity, just take my word for it. This is that same Seahawk that through the TCAP project and the markers we developed, selected, 5 years ago, that's now been multiplied and is, being widely commercially adopted. This field location in Pullman in 2016, our home station, we did not spray with a fungicide. This was a heavy year. It wasn't inoculated with stripe rust, but you can see that nearly 100 bushel yield compared to very well adapted elite lines that should be close, yielding 50% less or 40% less. I think this is a good example where when we have the discovery, the marker development, and the breeding all integrated in a continuum, things can be quite rapid and show good progress. So now to the actual research. This is just a graphical distribution of where the accessions in the USDA ARS National Small Grains Core Collection come from, representing breeding lines, cultivars, land races, kind of unknown. It's listed as 5,100 here in the end. We have genotypic data on a little over 4,400 of those. For each specialized panel or population, in this case it's just the winter wheat core collection, we've done our due diligence to try to best understand and account for population stratification and structure in the various studies. This is an example of the combination of two of those studies. This is stripe rust resistance loci we found in the entire winter wheat core collection, as well as about half of the spring wheat core collection. So in green, the loci that were detected in the global winter wheat collection, in yellow in the spring wheat, in blue, loci that were in common. I think this slide tells a lot. We spent a lot of time not just trying to, do a QTL study and publish and say, here's some new genes, but three different postdocs spent months painstakingly going through every bit of literature available to cross-reference and develop confidence intervals of previously mapped QTL for essentially every study we had available, to date. So this is a really nice composite, consensus map of stripe rust resistance in wheat. We discovered all these highlighted bars are markers tagging about 30 resistance loci that are very high confidence. There are a few hundred more that are probably real, but we didn't want to write about that many, basically. By doing this in a core collection, we started thinking more deeply about, do we need to keep doing these kind of screening, or can we start, subsampling or predicting within a collection? And just a simple graph like this, where the number of marker-wise significant SNPs detected in that same winter wheat panel that I'm showing here is regressed against either the infection type or the disease severity. And you can see we have pretty strong correlations between the underlying genetics, presumably, and the infection type. So we've investigated more about basically how can we sample. Is it going to be the same for every trait? And we found what I think are some interesting relationships. So this is a graph of the prediction accuracy for either infection type or severity at one location over 3 years or at a different location over 3 years. What we see in this graph is quite interesting. The Pullman has the most complex race structure. It has the most virulent races and basically gets a lot of disease. Mount Vernon is more of kind of a qualitative to semi-qualitative due to the race composition there. Infection type in general compared to severity is more of that kind of semi-qualitative to not quite quantitative trait, whereas something like severity in Pullman is really a quantitative trait, very normally distributed. We don't see these qualitative action much at all. And you can see that in this, we simulated this reanalyzed this over various population sizes. So assuming we had 250, 500, 750, 1,000, this is real data. This isn't simulation. It's just resampled and analyzed. And what you see for that kind of fully quantitative trait is our prediction accuracy continues to increase. presumably, you know, we didn't limit it out. Whereas we see a different distribution of effects in these kind of semi-qualitative traits. We've also been thinking, you know, what is the best way if we want to, you know, screen the entire 50,000 accessions in the core collection and make, you know, a prediction for stripe rust or rust resistance in general, what would be the most efficient way to sample that? And this is an analyzing the same about 1,500 springweed accessions in this case, assuming different marker densities, so either the full density, which is about one snip per 1.3 centimorgans when using a 9,000 snip chip on that collection, or if we do reduced densities. And we've also done kind of a joint GWAS prediction scheme, where what if we just take, say, the 400 most significant or associated SNPs from our GWAS studies and use that to make predictions in you know, other collections. And it turns out, you know, given LD and weed, it's no surprise that we don't need, you know, a 90,000 SNP chip. In this case, about 1,500 markers was adequate. When we do the joint GWAS, it was actually surprisingly close to, or basically right in between the sort of full density and these intermediate densities, where only 400 markers was enough to predict with about the similar level of accuracy if we did that joint GWAS prediction scheme. We've also, given the, like I said, the distribution of effects of rust disease in particular, we've been concerned about, are we even using the best models? And so in this case, a graduate student in my lab, Paul, has compared using the actual genetic matrix, or, you know, genetic data set from the global winter wheat collection, compared the power, or simulated the power to detect, he simulated a 10 quantitative nuclear QTN, or quantitative trait nucleotides, in this data set. And you know, we determined that this multi-locus mixed-linear model was most appropriate in his data set. And so we started analyzing that on the winter wheat core collection, and it's led us to some interesting results. In this case, this we included a diagnostic marker for a known gene that we had very good phenotype data. That gene is on a rye translocation, so it's inherited as a, you know, a whole chromosome or alien translocation block. With that marker included, or without it included, we detect a resistance locus, or many, several significant SNPs consistently, both on one chromosomes 1A and 1B. The gene is on 1B, or it's the alien translocation is on 1B in this case. However, if we use a multi-locus mixed model, which is a stepwise regression, just in the next step alone, it immediately gets rid of all that noise that in this case was due to homeo alleles, you know, being incorrectly genotyped in hexaploid wheat due to this alien translocation. I guess I want to, the scary part of this is that in other studies we haven't accounted for these things. And, you know, in this case, we have, if we don't include the diagnostic marker for SR31, so if we wouldn't have taken the time to genotype the entire core collection with that diagnostic marker, we would detect loci on chromosomes 1A and chromosomes 1B, go and publish QTL studies, tell people here's a gene, and have every bit of statistical confidence in that locus, and it wouldn't be real. And without that diagnostic marker, those in the end, the story we would tell, even in a multi-locus model, is that there's a gene on 1A with really high confidence, even though it's a 1B alien translocation. So I'm using this as an example for how polyploidy SNP chips we need to be a little bit more careful, consider different models, so that we end up on the right chromosome with detecting the right gene. Makes sense? I've shown stripe rust data to date. We've also, you know, we've completed the studies for seedling and adult plant phenotyping for stem rust. So we have, you know, UG99 resistance loci, other highly virulent races. This paper will probably be submitted in about a week. We've done the studies on Ethiopian durum wheat land races, which is pretty exciting as a unique source. And I'm not trying to, you know, show resistance loci here. That's not the point of the talk. But the interesting thing is we're generally finding about 70% of the same and about 30% new. So each time we go into one of these more distinct or unique panels, we continue to find additional resistance loci, and I don't see a plateau in sight, but at this point I think we have enough. We need to start working on them more than discovering new ones. This is an elite global derm population collaborating with Roberto Tuberosa and others through the TCAP grant. And again, similar story, we've kind of described the architecture of stripe rust resistance in global elite derm wheat. In the example I gave at the beginning about developing Seahawk, this is a paper we just published that tells the story of actually taking that initial hunch in 2011 that I used to select that line, and further mapping, validating, and coming up with markers that we feel are diagnostic in global germplasm that are useful to breeders, that I'm using at least as a breeder. So back to Golobal's travels. At this point, for the rust diseases, I feel like we have too many opportunities, and I'm basically asking for help. There's a lot of validation, diagnostic marker development that needs to happen. I think I've shown a case why that's really important in some cases. The germplasm development bottleneck that was brought up in the previous talk is the very real thing. Rust in particular, we've had a lot of money, more than most groups in wheat, to get progress done because of threats like UG99. What we consistently don't have any money for is to develop germplasm. And because we've had so much funding over the past several years, I actually see us moving away from actually implementing a lot of these things we've discovered. It's just not fashionable to spend a lot of money to develop germplasm for anybody. And I think we got to figure that out somehow. On a more basic level, how do we prioritize all these different resistance loci that we have? And by asking for help, I'm saying I'll send you any seed or genetic data you want if you want to take a gene and make it useful to somebody. So thank you for your time, and I really want to acknowledge NIFA, who provided the bulk of this funding through the Trinity CAP grant. The generosity and kindness and collaboration with the USDARS National Small Grain Germplasm Collection Crew, as well as collaborators that have actually done the direct research that I've talked about. So, thank you. So Jim Ming's asking, there's too many opportunities. I'll use Washington State as an example. There, one of my colleagues is sitting in the crowd here. We have several people working on several genes, but there's only so much one graduate student, one postdoc, can do. And anybody, like I said, anybody that's interested, wants something to work on, we're happy to put you to work with good preliminary data. That depends where you are. The question is what criteria for prioritizing like a given locus for further characterization. It's going to depend where you are, what your prominent diseases are, what your races are. The rust are a fairly social disease, so you should be thinking broadly, but at the same time there's local considerations. My personal priority is really developing the quantitative genes that have not shown any sort of specificity to date, the broad spectrum. So either they've shown no specificity as being a quantitative trait or a quantitative locus, or they've shown no specificity by being broadly effective against every race possible as a seedling. Just good genes. But there's a lot of different philosophies, and that's really a good question, but complicated. I know, and I'm not trying to complain. I feel like we've done a good job, and without the support we have, we wouldn't have this problem, this dilemma of how do we implement. Yeah.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
In one of the slides, you mentioned that you're able to get high prediction ability with just a few hundred markers. I was wondering whether that is because of high yielding weed, or that there are just a few underlying loci that are contributing to the disease.
I think it's it's, I think it's probably due to the relatively longer range LD, and we, you know, it's not like maize or something else. Plus, you know, it, with 400 and some markers, that's what I was mentioning. It was basically around 450 markers. Those markers are, every marker we've detected with a significant marker-wise effect, like P.001 or something on the stripe rust. So you're at that density, you're scanning the genome reasonably dense enough for wheat itself based on our LD blocks, and then you add on top of that the fact that that's basically, you know, 400 different resistance loci. I think that's why our prediction accuracy is so high.
Great. Thank you very much, Mike.